This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. This week on Africa Update, Zimbabweans voted more than a month ago for a president and for parliament. Political violence seems to be on the rise, but there may be signs of hope about new leadership. Plus, the price of rice soars along with other commodities. How are food shortages playing out in Africa? And what is Somalia doing to combat piracy off its shores? For more, we've got Bill Fletcher. He's a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and a former president of Trans-Africa Forum. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. So let's hash through the ongoing saga of Zimbabwe. The Election Commission confirms that the opposition now controls parliament for the first time in history. Now, President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party have controlled the nation since independence came in 1980. So regardless of what else happens, how do you think the parliamentary win by the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, will shake things up?
Well, I mean, it's hard to overstate how it's going to shake things up. That is that, as you said, this is the first time there is a majority, but there remains a significant ZANU-PF presence in parliament. So the difference is, I believe, about 10 to 12 delegates. So it's not an overwhelming victory, but it's nevertheless very significant. So depending on who wins the presidency, one of the things that we could see is stalemate, and in that the parliament may attempt to move certain measures and the president will block that. But the other factor here that we can only speculate on at this moment is that the opposition itself is not monolithic. I mean, as you noticed just the other day, the two factions in the MDC agreed to collaborate. But the split that took place in the MDC about a year ago was itself very significant. And in addition, there may be some fragmentation within ZANU-PF. So it's very unclear what the parliament will act like and look like at the end of the day.
When you go to the presidential elections, you now have a situation where the man who could be president, possibly in the future, Morgan Tsvangirai of the MDC, is out of the country, fears for his safety. You have supporters of his political party sometimes being beaten, having their houses destroyed. You still have no initial count on the presidential vote that took place over a month ago. What's the state of things?
Well, to begin with, the way that you phrased it in the very beginning, I think, is very, very important. That is, the man who may be president. And I say that because our president, Bush, made a statement recently announcing that Morgan Tsvangirai had won the election. Now, the last time I checked, and maybe I'm wrong, President Bush was not psychic. And therefore, there's no way that he could know for sure who won the election. It's possible, quite possible, that Morgan Tsvangirai won the election. It's also possible that that no one won, and therefore it has to go to a runoff. So I think that's one thing that's very important. In order for there to be any kind of peaceful and just transition, whether the transition is simply another term for President Mugabe, but a change in the parliament, or whether it's Morgan Tsvangirai coming in, there will have to be guarantees. One of the most important guarantees will be that the security forces will respect the rule of law, and that the security forces will neither launch a coup nor make a transition impossible. And I think that's where the other nation states in the Southern African development community become very, very important. This is one of the reasons that President Mbeki in South Africa is being criticized so strongly by many of the forces on the left for not playing a more active and strong role in bringing about peace and justice in Zimbabwe.
Let's turn to Somalia. Back in February, the Somali government wrote a letter to the UN Security Council requesting help to secure its waters. Now, yesterday, four countries introduced a draft resolution on the UN Security Council to fight piracy off of Somalia's coast. That resolution allows countries to use, and this is a quote, all necessary means to identify, deter, prevent, and repress acts of piracy and armed robbery. The draft resolution also allows prosecution of all taken pirates. Now, pirates are kind of a joke, and, you know, it's like, oh, Johnny Depp in that movie. But this is not what we're talking about. First of all, what are we talking about when we talk about the piracy around Somalia? And secondly, is a UN resolution going to help?
Well, we're definitely not talking about romantic pirates. We're talking about very well-armed craft with rocket-propelled grenades, heavy caliber machine guns, and assault rifles. We're talking about groupings of bandits who think of nothing in terms of murdering the crew of various ships and taking whatever they can when they loot the ships. So the coast of Somalia has been declared the second most dangerous water area or second most dangerous coast on the globe. Precisely because of this issue of piracy. So from the standpoint of international trade and commerce, and given the location of Somalia, right near the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea, it is a very serious matter. Whether the UN resolution will help, what will be necessary will be naval forces that are prepared to essentially destroy these pirates. But Farai, I guess I wish I could say that piracy was the most important question facing the people of Somalia. It just simply isn't. And while piracy is very important from the standpoint of international trade, Somalia continues to remain in a civil war, remain under the occupation of the Ethiopians, and then there are disturbances that have broken out in the country, the so-called country of Somaliland that seceded from Somalia. So the situation there remains very grim, and I would rather see the United Nations put its attention to the peaceful resolution to the conflict in Somalia itself.
I want to move on to one more related topic. You know, in Somalia, there have been regions suffering from a drought, and you see Somalians moving towards urban centers in order to survive. The question of food, basic sustenance, is one that is really on a lot of people's minds, including those people at the UN. There have been food riots in places like Haiti, Egypt, Burkina Faso, Mauritania. And today, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon announced an international task force to deal with global food prices. The World Bank says it will double its lending for agriculture in Africa over the next year to $800 million. So what's causing the food crisis in your mind?
Several things. So we have drought in many places, and the drought is not simply a natural phenomenon, although there's certainly an element of that. But we have in regions of Africa, like in the Horn of Africa, the Sahel, as it's as referred to, going across from the Red Sea over to the Atlantic, we have growing. The word is desertification, but it's the spreading of deserts, the spreading of the Sahara. And part of the reason for the expansion of the deserts has to do with agricultural practices that are a legacy of colonialism and are the result also of the sorts of products that the agricultural communities can obtain any money for. So you have a destruction of the land. It's sort of like in the United States with the Dust Bowl in the 30s, where you had the land was not being properly utilized, and it was basically being destroyed and then turns into dust.
Bill,
so you have that.
Before we let you go, do you think that a solution is going to come from the UN or governments like the U.S. who do some food aid, or whom?
It will need to come from all of those sources, but it also has to, we have to take into account that the economic policies that are encouraging things like biofuel all drive up the cost of fuel. So trading policies, agricultural policies that force people to engage in a form of agriculture that destroys the land, increases the price of food, and pushes us further towards a global crisis.
Well, Bill, thanks so much.
Anytime.
Bill Fletcher is a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and the former president of Trans-Africa Forum.